Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Darren Korb. It's been a while, and it's great to have a chance to catch up.
Happy to be here.
I'm really looking forward to diving into your soundtrack for Hades, the new Supergiant game. And the soundtrack is just, oh my God, it's so incredible. And
thank you.
It just goes on and on and on, which is fantastic.
Yes.
But in a good way.
Yeah. Just keeps going.
Yeah. And briefly, the story of Hades is that Zagreus is in hell. He's being kept there by Hades, his father, but he has this need, this real, you know, desire to get up to the surface world and find his mother. And it sounds like this game was started as soon as you guys finished Pyre. Is that right?
Pretty much. I mean, we I think started developing this game maybe like a month or two after Pyre came out. Yeah, it was like a really fast turnaround for us. And yeah, we were kind of prototyping like by September or something of 2017.
Wow. Did you have, I'm astonished by that, because it seems that normally a studio would like take a break for a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah. Is that because you guys had so many ideas that came up during the development of Pyre and they didn't fit in the game, and so you just decided to stick them in a new game?
I mean, I think it was a number of factors. You know, we were all really, at that point, I think, you know, each game we make, I think in a lot of ways is a reaction to the previous thing we made. So partially, I think we were just kind of tired of having to like write a paragraph to explain what Pyre was to people. You know, it's just like, we had to like, had to write an essay. Like, here's what the game is. And so I think we were interested in making something that was really, you could define what it was in a sentence or two and people would kind of understand what they were getting into. And that was something that was exciting to us, I think. And we were really anxious to kind of begin that process and start working on something that would kind of fit, tick that box in particular. And so we, you know, there were a handful of ideas that we all had for sure. But yeah, I think in September is when we properly started prototyping Hades.
Wow. So that was like September 3 years ago. So
yeah, September, yeah. 2017.
Wow. And we've talked before about how you write concept music to kind of help people get ideas. And so what were some of your early ideas like?
Yeah, well, they're kind of in Hades, actually. The Wretched Shades was one of, I think, the first piece I did.
Wow.
And that one, you know, I had kind of done some research. We knew it was going to be involving Greek myth somehow. When we started working on it, we had kind of a different conceit that wasn't going to be escaping from the underworld. It was going to be more like a labyrinth, Minotaur, Theseus kind of thing. And we just kind of, at a certain point, we had a creative redirection, kind of a creative reboot. But for the first few pieces I did were Wretched Shades, From Olympus, and then maybe House of Hades. But it wasn't called that at the time, obviously, because it wasn't about that. But I think part of what that was is I did a bunch of research and kind of ordered some Mediterranean instruments to mess around with. And I got a lavta, which is kind of like a lute, like a Turkish lute, sort of, with some frets and seven strings. And then I ordered a balama, which is a Turkish, like a long neck saz kind of instrument with three courses of strings, seven strings also. And then I also got a bouzouki, which is kind of like a giant Greek mandolin, more or less. And just started messing around with those, and I found them to be very evocative of a particular region, a particular setting. And so I tried to push on that, and you know, those first few pieces are really just me kind of experimenting with those instruments and trying to put the player into a particular setting.
Thank you.
once I sort of figured out how I wanted to approach that aspect of the music was around the time we had done that sort of creative redirect and we knew it was going to take place in Greek hell. So I was like, okay, well, it's got to have some rock. Got to have metal. It comes from hell. Yeah. So I knew I needed some of that in there. And that's about the time I started, you know, trying to figure out how to approach the pieces and how to incorporate a sort of rocking section into the pieces when you get to the bosses and stuff. So yeah, I think that's sort of how it began for me.
Wow. Yeah, first time I heard Wretched Shades, I was just, you know, because it starts out, it sounds almost like a Greek or a Mediterranean folk dance, which is cool. And then you add the little chorus, the black guys, like, and then the metal part starts, and I was like, oh my God. So I love how you did that. And maybe you could like walk us through how you grafted the rocking out metal guitar part onto those cues.
Yeah, I think my approach ended up being, I would kind of make each of those longer pieces, like Out of Tartarus, for example, in three sections. One is a sort of introduction, anticipatory section with some light sort of pulsing synthesizers and bass and some synth pads and like some light percussion. And then the next section after that, you know, that'll play for a couple of chambers. And then the next section will begin, which is the sort of proper piece, which is a sort of Mediterranean folk arrangement of the entire piece. And then that section can play as long as you're, you know, for the next few chambers or however long, that, you know, it'll loop eventually, but it's, you know, that section is like 3 to 5 minutes or whatever, depending on the piece. And then when you get to either a mini boss or a boss, we'll have a transition happen. It'll hit a downbeat marker and it'll kick it over to the next section. And then it'll play the sort of same form, but with a rock arrangement, essentially. It was how I approached it. We'll be right back.
you know, a lot of boss battles have their own choreography, you know, because the battles are kind of in stages too. You know, minions come out and you defeat them, and then there's, you know, another, like, another part of the battle and stuff. And so did you have to work with that sort of boss battle choreography too with those tracks?
The only boss battle where that happens is the Hades, the sort of final battle. Yeah. I don't know if it's a spoiler to say that, but the
we
sort
can
of
assume
final,
yeah.
final boss battle of the game has stages, and then if you engage Extreme Measures 4, then there's even more to that. And so, yeah, it's a multi-stage piece just for that battle, which is unique there. And the other ones, it's just sort of the rocking piece, section of the piece that will play for the entirety of the boss battle. And kind of built into the piece, more or less, are different sections and changes that happen that tend to just kind of feel like they're lining up with what's happening in the gameplay, you know, just more or less. So I think that, you know, the fights aren't as specifically staged in the other boss fights and mini boss fights.
Yeah. But the whole wash of sound is just so cool. And I love how they each sound really distinctive. And so were there some bosses that you, I guess maybe it'd be cool to find out, you know, which bosses you really like got into and how you gave them their own like musical signature.
Yeah. So for me, I really approached it more as the pieces are of the particular region of the underworld. So all the pieces that play in Tartarus and that, you know, by extension play when you're fighting the Furies are sort of designed for that place, if that makes sense. And it's, for me, it was less about, well, some of them, that's not exactly true. Some of them I focused more on what it would feel like during the boss section initially, right? And then extrapolated that back to the rest of the area. But like for the King and the Bull, for example, I wanted it to feel exciting while specifically I had that fight in mind while I was writing the rocking. I started with the rocking part on that one and then extrapolated it backwards. most of the pieces I would start the other way and then kind of do a rocking arrangement afterwards. But it really depends on the particular piece.
Yeah.
I think all of the Elysium pieces, I started with the rocking version and worked my way backwards.
I've heard that from only one other composer, and it's such a cool idea to plan it that way, because then you know where it's mm-hmm. going to end up. And so then you can kind of like step it back down to the beginning. And so that's really cool. So how did this stretch your guitar playing skills? I mean, is that all you playing that mm-hmm. incredible guitar?
Except for the Unseen Ones. That is two amazing guitar wizards that I had play on the track that I, you know, if I could practice for 1,000 lifetimes and never be as good as those guys. But all the rest of it's me, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, I had no idea. This is really amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's certainly, I enjoy trying to play something that I'm not quite good enough to play yet, so I'll have to go and practice it. It'll, like, force me to kind of get better and figure out how to do it. Certainly, a lot of that stuff was beyond the edge of my comfort zone as a guitar player. Like, I'm not, you know, I play guitar, but I'm not, like, a metal dude usually, and I'm not, you know, like, it's fun and I enjoy it, but I'm not a virtuoso by any means. But it was fun for me to write some stuff that was kind of pushing the limits of my abilities a little bit.
Yeah, I bet. Because if you've got a chance, I mean, I suppose it's kind of like a boss battle, right? I mean, you just, just got to keep doing it over and over.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What was the learning curve like with those other stringed instruments, the bouzouki and some of those? Were they hard to sort of master?
I mean, I don't know that I've mastered them, but they're fairly straightforward. I mean, they're different. They're tuned differently, but mechanically it's all kind of the same. I think the biggest challenges were actually the lavta and the balama have these extra kind of microtonal frets. So you just have to kind of ignore, like, know which frets to ignore and to skip to, like, which it's like the last tiny one in the series of four tiny ones, you know, that you want to play, and the other ones are going to be not the note you want. So that's a trick when you're just trying to play, like, execute something. For writing, it's not a big deal because you're just, you know, I'm just kind of experimenting. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it, and I sort of learned chord shapes over, like, oh, here's a minor shape I can move up and down the neck, here's a major shape, okay, all right, you know, like, fine, you know, that's enough. And then I would, you know, the rest of it just experimentation. But yeah, I actually really like writing on instruments I don't fully understand, especially guitar shaped ones that I have some kind of physical facility with, but it's tuned differently, the frets are different, the way the strings are laid out is different. And so it forces me, like, I can't rely on my muscle memory to play an E major chord or whatever. Like, I don't, you know, whatever feels good when you pick up a guitar, the first thing you want to do, like, you can't do that with these instruments. So it forces me to remove myself from my habits as an instrumentalist, which I really like.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun for me.
Yeah, getting out of your comfort zone. And I'm curious about how you were able to work the tuning of these different instruments into the music around it. I mean, did they sort of determine what key things were going to be in and kind of the whole overall sound?
A lot of times they would, especially if I started writing on those instruments. If I started writing on those instruments, I would, tailor the key of the piece and tune my guitar as weird and do whatever I had to do to get it to line up with the key of the piece. There's a lot of C and G. Just because those happen to be, you know, important notes for the instruments in the soundtrack. And if I started on guitar, you know, sometimes it would be in a key that was more of a guitar key. It would be an E it just depends. depends on the tune and depends kind of what instrument I start on. And then I'll kind of back solve it and figure out how to play something that makes sense on the instruments that are not tuned the same way.
Yeah. things that I think was really interesting about this whole development process with Hades is that it was in early access, sounds like really pretty soon into the development. And so what sort of challenges did that throw your way that maybe you hadn't had to deal with before?
I think there were a lot of advantages, and I don't know that I would say disadvantages, but it's certainly like a different kind of a process from what we're used to, for sure. And adjusting to that took some time. I know as a team, just once we entered early access, for the first update or two, we were really struggling to find a good way to collect and process all the feedback from people. And that was kind of a lot of people's full-time job for a few weeks, was just doing that and figuring out a better way to do that. Reading individual Jira or Groove messages is not as efficient as looking at a post on Discord with and seeing how many thumbs up it has. You know, we kind of figured out a better way to organize the feedback eventually. So that was a challenge. And I think another challenge, which was helpful for us for sure, but was, you know, presented challenges, was keeping the game constantly playable. No matter what we did each update, we'd break the game apart and have to put it all back together again and have it polished enough for people to play and not be crashing constantly or getting prog stopped. So that was a challenge for sure. And I think it was a really good challenge that helped keep us focused on, you know, what was essential to the game and what was really important about it. And for me, it was really interesting having 14 tracks from the soundtrack done and released when the game launched into early access in December 2018, and then writing sort of 16 pieces publicly, more or less. You know, like I would write them and then they'd go into the game and in like a week later and they'd be done and then they'd release them, you know. So it was really interesting having that super fast turnaround on pieces that I would write, and then I'd get them mastered and then I'd release them like a week later.
Wow. You know?
So it was pretty cool. Instead of sort of working on tracks for 3 years and hoarding all this stuff and getting it all ready to go and then releasing it all at once, it was a really kind of exciting way to approach it. And, you know, I tried to have a handful of pieces for the end of the project that I had held back, or, you know, that were finished maybe earlier, but were not, you know, we weren't planning on releasing until the full game was released. And so that it was nice to be able to do that right at the end.
Well, it must have been really fun to get feedback from players too, like right away. Because I know it must just kill you guys to write a thing and not be able to tell anybody about it for like 3 years.
Yeah, it was delightful. I mean, yeah, it was really hard for me not to talk about the thing I did in London for from January through September.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty tough.
Well, let's talk about that thing you did in London.
Sure, the thing I did in London.
Because that just sounds amazing. Like all of these sort of stars lining up with the concert of Supergiant's music, and then working with Austin Wintry and incredible soloists, and Ashley Barrett, of course, was there. And so how did that all come together?
There was talk on team leading up to our 10th anniversary of the studio, which happened in 2019, which we were going to all be at PAX West for, talk of doing some sort of event or something cool for that. And we didn't know what it was going to be. And Michael, who was our operations director at the time, I think he suggested that we try doing some sort of orchestral concert or something. And I was like, that's crazy. What do you mean? How would I even do that? I can't do that. And then I thought about it for a second. I was like, well, let me just ask Austin and see if he can give me some insight onto, you know, I'm friendly with Austin Wintry, and you know, I've chatted with him about this kind of stuff in the past a little bit, and just wanted to get his 2 cents on what would this take to put together this kind of a thing, you know, what's going to be feasible for us to, in terms of budget and in terms of like practice and rehearsal time and in terms of what kind of ensemble is going to make sense for a live setting. And so we worked up this theoretical ensemble that's kind of kooky and strange and you know, non-traditional, I would say. And I had some specific creative goals for it. Once we had decided, okay, we're doing this, and we're going to have, you know, he helped me find the arranger, and I provided some guidance creatively to the arranger, and Austin helped me sort of give notes to him. But basically, this guy, Brian LaGuardia, did an incredible job with the arrangements. But I was really interested in having versions of these pieces that were not just translations of the recording to different instruments, and all of the same stuff is represented, but differently. I was really interested in having something that was tailored to the ensemble. And one of my rules was like, I don't want a drum kit. I don't want to like recreate the, you know, have someone try and recreate the stuff. I don't want electric, anything electric, you know, no electric guitars. So yeah, I really wanted to, I was curious to see what the result of that would be. And I was really pleased with how it turned out. So what happened was the show went over so well at PAX West. We had such a wonderful time doing it, and the response was so awesome that we thought, well, geez, it would be a shame to not do something with these cool arrangements that we have. Maybe we should try and record an album. And so I asked Austin to kind of go ahead and price out, like, you know, what are some options for ways we could do this? And he's like, well, there's this cool place in Seattle that'd be pretty good. There's Nashville, a little more expensive, but it'd be really nice. And then, you know, I'll just put Abbey Road in there just in case. Yeah. You know? and this sort of, it all ended up working out that we were able to do Abbey Road, and it was just kind of an unbelievable sort of once in a lifetime thing. And also partially to justify doing that, and partially because, you know, it was an opportunity, I wrote a couple of pieces for Hades to record at Abbey Road. So it would be, in addition to the 10 tracks from the album, there are these two Hades tracks we'd be doing as well, On the Coast and In the Blood. And that was amazing. I mean, to be recording in sort of Studio 2 at Abbey Road, where the Beatles recorded all their albums, and, you know, it was an unreal experience for me, for sure. And had to sort of pinch myself over and over again the whole time to make sure it was actually happening.
I'll bet. Yeah. I mean, do you really get a sense, yeah, like the walls sort of reverberate from all of the music that has been made in that studio?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly sounds awesome, and I recognize it from all the photos of the Beatles, you know, and the movies, you know, the Let It Be movie, and stuff. It's just like, oh, this is the room that all those dudes were, you know.
Yeah, well,
that all of that stuff happened.
Even just walking up to the door. I mean, the door is iconic, the front door.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah, and the steps and the whole thing are just, every step you're like, ooh, you know, this is the place where they have that picture, you know. And it really was just a surreal, incredible experience. And I didn't spend that much time in the actual live room. I was in a ISO room recording vocals for most of it, but I did get to record some guitar, like in the big room, some acoustic guitar, and it was such a treat to be there. And everybody was so, all the players were incredible, and, you know, Ashley and I both had just like the coolest time.
It's just amazing. I mean, what did you do to sort of like tamp down your, you know, I'm screaming on the inside because I'm here now, and just kind of settle down and get to work?
Ashley and I just practiced a lot before we went. We just like, because the approach to the recording, we were going to try and track the vocals live more or less with the orchestra, you know. So we really wanted to be able to treat it more like a performance. So we just practiced a ton for months, you know, leading up to the session, and really just tried to have it all laid out and have it all be muscle memory. So we didn't, you know, we could just kind of focus on doing it while we were there and not have to really think about it too much.
We'll be right back.
where is the album now? Is it going to be released soon?
Yeah, so the album, the pre-order has happened. We sold out of the limited edition all like right away. And then there's a standard edition, and now there's also a special edition by popular demand. We ended up making another version of the vinyl. The tracks are not yet released, but it's going to be, you know, before the end of the year is the plan. So soon. And I'm very excited for people to hear it. It was such a blast to make.
Yeah, I can imagine. And fun for people to hear kind of a different take on all of these things as well. And I've watched the video, and what Austin says about your songs is just so wonderful. He describes them as almost like little operas. They have that same emotional quality, and the words have so much importance. And so I'm really looking forward to hearing them and hearing you and Ashley singing with the whole orchestra.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that. And yeah, I was certainly, Austin said a number of very, very kind things throughout the course of the process. And I certainly couldn't have, it just like wouldn't have happened at all without his help. So he was more instrumental in the process than he likes to admit, I think.
Yeah. Wow. What a cool experience though. I mean, just blowing you away. I mean, were you able to use any of that experience finishing up the Hades soundtrack? I mean, beyond those two songs, did you use anything else from those sessions, or I don't know. How did that impact the rest of the music that you wrote for Hades, I guess?
Well, so there wasn't a lot of music left to write technically after that. There were only three more, I guess four pieces that I ended up working on after that I hadn't made yet at that time. I think it was the sort of payback mix of Final Expense was one of them, which is just sort of like a redo, you know, a little adding some elements, different mix, different sonic components of Charon's theme. And then I did Rage of the Myrmidons and Field of Souls, I think, were two. And then the Unseen Ones, which I really can't take that much credit for because these two incredible guitar players did most of the work. So yeah, I would say as far as changing the way I worked or anything like that, it wasn't that necessarily, but certainly the experience of working on those two tracks there was transformative and amazing, and hearing the results was really remarkable for me, and I'm so thrilled with how they turned out. In particular, In the Blood is so it's such a thing that I haven't quite done in that way before, and I was really excited to be able to once I had the mix all finished and everything to hear how it turned out. I was like super, super excited hearing it in game for the first time. And, you know, seeing, feeling the impact of that stuff was really, really exciting.
Yeah. Well, it comes through just even listening in the soundtrack too, cause I got chills listening to it. I mean, the awesome way your voices blend is just, it's just so cool. And Ashley is amazing. And her character of Eurydice, the song that you wrote for her, for Eurydice, Good Riddance, is really great.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, that one, that was a lot of fun to write, and that one has a little bit of a different feel, I would say, than a lot of the rest of the stuff on the soundtrack. And my rationale for that was that it's one that Eurydice herself had written, and you know, where Orpheus's stuff that he writes is maybe more flowery and operatic or something, or kind of proper feeling. I wanted her stuff to be a little bit more emotional and sort of spare and simple. But, you know, I approached it more like writing a proper kind of four chord pop song more than the Orpheus stuff, which has a sort of a grander feel.
Oh,
And In the Blood is sort of trying to combine things from both of them, because it's one that they'd written together was the conceit, right?
Well, yeah, and let's I'd love to talk with you about how you decided on a voice and the sound and the feel for your lament for Orpheus too.
Yeah. The sort of only singing in falsetto thing was something that I knew I wanted to have an angle on Orpheus. I didn't, because trying to embody this, the sort of greatest musician who ever lived, quote unquote, you know, who moved the gods to tears with his beautiful voice, there has to be some way into that, because it's just too daunting to try and approach that head on. You know, you have to find sort of a shortcut or a different way in. And for me, I thought, well, what sort of a voice would be a voice that would move the gods to tears and sort of make exceptions to their rules just for him? And I figured it had to be something that was sort of ethereal and angelic. And my head went to, well, it's got to be falsetto. And okay, he's only going to sing falsetto. That's the rule. Anything I write for Orpheus, it has to be a falsetto.
Just blown away to learn that, you know, in your capacity as audio director for Supergiant, you did the voice acting for Zagreus too. I mean, that's so cool. Have you done voice acting before?
Just a little bit in, like, in Pyre, I voiced a couple of characters, but it was in a made up language, so it's sort of not quite the same thing. You know? But no, I mean, I grew up acting a little bit in, you know, plays and stuff through high school, basically, but I haven't really done any acting since then. It's something I really enjoyed at the time and spent sort of a lot of time thinking about over the years, but haven't it was sort of a thing that got replaced by music to some degree in terms of things I was excited about. But I was happy to do it. And it really was just one of those things where I recorded some scratch voiceover for the game when we were trying to prototype everything. And we had some auditions and stuff, but we didn't end up liking the auditions that we got any more than the scratch I'd already recorded. So the team was just like, yeah, you should just keep doing it. Okay, I guess so.
How did you decide, you know, what he should sound like?
We thought about, yeah, Greg and I talked about that a bunch, and we tried to imagine the sort of collection of character traits and what we were trying to do with the character of Zag and how we could sort of embody that vocally. You know, I looked at stuff like Loki, like Tom Hiddleston as Loki a little bit for some of the kind of twinkle in your eye, mischievous vibe a little bit that he has. And Asa Butterfield, the actor, I think has like some things about the way he speaks that were interesting qualities that I tried to sort of emulate as best I could for Zagreus. But yeah, kind of somewhere in there. And we decided early on, well, he should have a mode where he's sort of talking to himself and it's sort of quiet and more inward. We should have a mode where he's sort of yelling at enemies. And then we should have a mode where he's interacting with other characters. And it was sort of like, it would, you know, stuff would fall into one of those three buckets more or less. And so I had to try and figure out what that was. And over time, I defined those a little bit better, I think. You know, I went back and replaced a lot of the earliest stuff that I wasn't happy with, but some of it stayed. I mean, all the way up until now, you know.
Wow.
Just a handful of it did not get replaced. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just so cool, though. I mean, there are a lot of characters and a lot of voices. And so did you work with all of them as the audio director?
Yeah, I directed all the acting, the voice actors for the game. And yeah, it was a ton of fun. I mean, we over the course of our past few games had sort of ramped up the amount of actors we'd worked with, and we sort of honed and refined our process of writing to editing to implementation and tried to make that, you know, tried to improve that process on each project. And I think the volume of VO that we undertook for this game, I don't think we could have done it before this game, if that makes sense. I mean, there's like something like 22,000 lines of dialogue in the game, which is a lot. So,
well, the writing is so good because it's really, it's, you know, sort of snarky and lighthearted. I mean, obviously there's a dark quality to the game too, because of Zagreus's mission to get back to find his mom, Persephone, and the battles that he has with his dad and stuff. But I love the lighter tone that the writing has too. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Greg Kasavin, yeah, he really outdid himself with the writing on this game, in my opinion. I think it's, yeah, it turned out really cool. And there's just such, just from a practical standpoint and an organizational standpoint, I'm really amazed at what he was able to achieve. There's just so much stuff. And yeah, I'm really pleased with the approach to the tone. I think it was really awesome to be able to include some lighter stuff in a game that takes place in hell, that sort of just outwardly can appear to be pretty dark, but when you really get into it, it's kind of a happy game. And the sort of characters kind of have happy endings to their arcs and stuff, and it all sort of trends positive. And it's a really fun deception, I think, actually, that you think it's going to be this sort of grim experience that is heartbreaking, but I find that it tends to trend the other direction, and that was really fun to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be in these different areas, and like you say, I mean, you know, you've got a boss battle coming up, but to have these little moments where there's the, you know, snappy repartee and and stuff like that, it's really great. It's a nice balance. So
yeah, that's awesome to hear. Yeah. And yeah, and even when you do get to the boss, you have an exchange with them usually, you know, and yeah, hopefully that added context with the character relationships between Zagreus and whoever the boss is helps, you know, helps you be more invested and care more about beating them or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, besides getting to record at Abbey Road, I mean, what else were some of the like really standout moments of working on this game?
Gosh, I mean,
that's hard to top, just, but you know,
it's hard to top. Yeah. That was amazing. I think the launches have all been really cool. I mean, launching into early, I mean, we launched the game like, you know, a dozen times or something because of all the, but the initial launch into early access was really exciting and crazy. And there were like a lot of moving parts to that. And the announcement at the Game Awards and all the stuff and the trailer leading up to that. And just having all that come together, having the NoClip documentary sort of embedded and making, you know, making stuff that whole time. It was really, that stuff was really exciting. And I would say each of the launches were extremely exciting and gratifying when they sort of went off more or less without a hitch, you know, with as few hitches as one could hope for when trying to do something with a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of another studio that has the fan love that Supergiant has. And I've been at the booths at PAX East and seen the line just snake around and around and around. And clearly you guys are doing something right and something nobody else is doing. And so it's just, it must be just such a fun atmosphere to be working in.
Absolutely. I mean, the fans are so incredible and it's such a wonderful community of fans. It's so strange to you know, you can actually read the YouTube comments and it's not like horrifying, you know,
yeah.
It's like people are saying nice. That's so nice, you know, for the most part. And it really is incredible to just have kind of a positive community of humans all kind of enjoying something together. And yeah, in this day and age, it's really, we certainly don't take it for granted having people be so on board with what we do and so enthusiastic about it. It's really incredible.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about a lot of things, but is there anything that I didn't get around to that you'd like people to know about, you know, what's coming next for the music or anything else about the soundtrack?
Gosh, I mean, I have a little side project I've been working on for a minute with my band Control Group. We're working, you know, we recorded tracks for an album in like 2014 that I've been sitting on for years. So I finished a mix finally yesterday. So, you know, we're actually getting somewhere with that, which is exciting. But yeah, I mean, we're just, as far as Supergiant stuff goes, we're just trying to support Hades, and there's still more to do on that and get it all sorted out and make sure it's stable before we stop patching it a lot and and before we kind of disappear for a minute. So yeah, we're trying to make sure that's all in a good place. We hope to have a lot of that stuff kind of wrapped up by the end of the year, I think, but you know, who knows? It's one of those things where it's like, we'll do it as long as we have to do it, and then we'll figure out what's next.
Wow, Darren, it has been so, so much fun to talk with you, and the soundtrack is just amazing. The whole game is incredible, and so thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.